Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio Nation, you are tuned into the cutting room floor. I am LeVar, and I really don't know how to explain today.
Happy Freaky Friday.
You're not kidding. I think this is more of a Freaky Friday more than what other people will ever know. It is Friday the 13th, and I am joined by my lovely co-host, who is with us here every week. I cannot explain what today is.
It is Friday the 13th. Freak of Decapobia. Wait, no, that's not right.
No, you're right. I think it is.
Freak of Tech. Wait, how's it go? I don't remember how it goes. Triskaidekaphobia. There you go.
Is that it?
That's it.
All I know, this is weirdness, because if people knew exactly what happened before this show, this is what I call take two, but it's take two in a way in which I can't explain, because I don't even know if I can, and I don't even know if I'm going to. Let's just put it this way. Today's show is very rare. I'll put it that way. And I will admit to you that as we're starting this show, I had a ton of stuff that was I usually bring up on my screen so that I'll have it ready. I'm kind of redoing it. But I do have our first word from last week, so hooray, it is back. But I just cannot believe it. We're able to have a second chance at the show. But
I'm excited. I told you, I was excited. The universe works in mysterious ways.
Oh, you are kidding. But the first story that we want to go over, and I do apologize for my voice because I'm still kind of going through something, and as I have said, I don't know whether to blame my lovely co-host, Barry, or I don't know whether to blame my lovely co-host on Sunday nights, Katie, but I have a feeling one of them is to blame for the current cold or state that I'm in. But
it's always been blaming the women. Shouldn't have been kissing up on us, that's all.
blame it on the women. But my story was about the age-old question of blondes or brunettes. And according to the Daily Mail and Glamour magazine, researchers sent a woman into nightclubs in three different wigs, blonde, brunette, and red, to see which one drew the most interest from guys. Which one do you think drew the most interest?
Well, I know which one I'd want to draw more interest. More interest,
one?
I think, would go to the blonde, but I would want the brunettes to get the glory at this point.
Yes and no. Actually, you are kind of correct on both ends. You'll be happy about this story. When they sent her in with three different wigs, she was approached the most often as a blonde. She was approached 60 times as a blonde, 42 times as a brunette, 18 as a redhead. But when they questioned all 130 men later, they found that she was rated most highly for attractiveness and intelligence as a brunette. So in theory, the blonde will get approached, but the brunette would actually get called in this scenario.
Yay for brunettes, brown-haired girls.
But you know, when I kind of bring up that age-old question, I was like, it's almost kind of like back in the day, if you enter a room and it's kind of like I caught the Baywatch factor, where Pamela Anderson was sitting in there and Yasmine Bleeth were sitting in there, who would be approached more? Then, of course, it would be Pamela Anderson, but I think guys would be scared because they would already think. They would have the tattoos. But I think that they would be more scared because they would think that Pamela is, say, I guess, already not available or way above what they could ever hope and dream to get the woman. But even though Yasmine is just as beautiful, but they would probably say, hey, you know, she's more smart, and I could probably get along better with her than, say, Pamela. I don't know why I'm using the Baywatch factor. I'm not living in the 90s. But you know what I mean, right?
Well, I mean, as a brunette, yes, I have brown hair. As a brunette, I would say that sitting in a bar, the blondes always do get, the blondes have more fun. But you're right. I think that, and not saying anything about blondes, there are plenty of very intelligent blonde women out there, but it's the blonde joke. You know, it's the standard, well, is she really, really that smart, or is she just, you know, reading off the cue cards? And we all perpetuate that blonde joke and blonde moments and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So they don't have brunette moments. They have blonde moments. So I see where you're coming from. I'm just happy that brunettes get the fun. They get the, you know, the glory. We get the phone calls back. Ha! Take that.
Yes, take that, all of you blonde girls who do get approached more than the brunettes.
I get the phone call tomorrow. No, I'm just kidding.
And
we get a phone call the next day. That's a bonus on its own. That's a whole different show.
Oh, Lord. No, I'm pretty sure you'll get phone calls next day. But I want to go
into
this topic. But I wanted to go into this next topic because before we start our other topics for the day, I felt maybe it was more appropriate to do this topic first, and it's regarding kids. And you mentioned your lovely girl on the show in the past, and there is a brand new study out that, you know, with the fact that babies start off with a clean slate, the name that you choose for your little one reveals more about your personality than theirs. And choosing your child's name, of course, is a big decision. They're going to walk around with it for the rest of their lives. And that when a child is born, the name reflects more on you than them. The name doesn't belong to you. You're making a decision because they can't do it for themselves. But what you choose says a lot about your personality. And there's this article, and they asked, how do you make sure that you choose wisely? And according to Jennifer Moss, who is the author of the 1 Million Baby Name book and the founder of BabyNames.com, she says that when deciding a name, you want to see it from the child's point of view and how she or he will have to live with it throughout their lives. She says, try the name out at your local coffee shop. How do you feel giving that out as your name? What kind of reaction do you get, and how does it make you feel? And they had some examples here. And I thought it was very interesting. Now, when you were naming your little one, what factors went into it for you?
When we were naming the little one, we, of course, didn't know whether it was going to be a boy or a girl beforehand. So we picked out one name for the boy, one name for the girl. We did have a sentimental, I guess is how they put it in the article, sentimental point of view, which is we wanted to have a family name involved, but we did not want the family name to be the first name because most people don't give out middle names. So the family name became the middle name. And then the first name, we wanted to be unique enough that there weren't 900 of them, but not so far left that everybody would be like, what? You know, we didn't want, like when I grew up, the 16 Jennifers in the same class. But we didn't also want to name it like Jay-Z and Beyonce with the blue ivy and have her come up as, you know, blue. And no offense to the name, it's a very beautiful name, but hi, I'm blue. I'm sorry. Is there anything I could do to help you, make you feel better? No, no, that's my name. You know, that kind of thing.
Well, here's the thing. According to them, if your child has an unusual name, and I'm going to use the celeb baby names because, of course, we always go by celebrities because they're either way out of left field or they're right on target. So, you know, you remember such baby names as Gwyneth Paltrow's Apple. Actor Jason Lee named his son Pilot Spectre, which was weird. And Nicolas Cage named his Kal-El. And they said if your child has an unusual name, you crave the spotlight. For parents who choose such names, it's a possible combination of being a creative person and liking the attention that the name gives not only to their child, but to them for choosing it. And it says when you tell people your child's name, it will lead to a lot of questions. They'll want to know the backstory. So, in fact, these parents often have ordinary names and probably found themselves being one of four kids with their name in school, and they didn't want their child to experience the same thing. They want them to be noticed. If your child has an old-fashioned name, you're on the conservative side. So, like, with such baby names as Jennifer Connelly, she named her daughter Agnes, which I don't see a lot of Agneses around that much anymore. Richard Gere named his son Homer, and Sarah Jessica Parker named hers Tabitha. It says, don't mistake conservative for boring. An old-fashioned name is also on trend right now, so it's a way to be in fashion without going over the top. The three-generation rule comes into effect here. For parents, their own names sound boring. The baby's grandparents' names are old, but the great-grandparents' names go far enough back that they actually sound fresh again. So that's why names like Emma, Amelia, Jacob, and Lillian come back into popularity.
Mary, bring back Mary. There aren't any Marys anymore.
You know what? That is true.
Young Mary.
There aren't.
We'll do it that way. I don't know a lot of school kids named Mary.
I think your name will come back around probably a generation from now. I think, you know, it's one of those things of where, like you said, it's like Jennifer. You know, there's a lot of Jennifers, or like Rose, or, you know, Violet. You know, that stuff, that was, you know, years ago. And I think it's going to, it's like everything comes back again sometime. And I think, you know, it will come back around, and they'll probably spell it some different format or some different way. So never fear. But see, the easy thing for you is that at least you can, yeah, but the easy thing for you is that you can still find, like, a novelty license plate with your name on it, though.
Yes. Yes, I can. I can go into Chicago and find a, I love Chicago, and have my name on it.
Now, you know, I can't find a LeVar one. I got to be the guy that's kind of, like, stand there sadly at the front to get it specially made and pay, like, you know, $49.95 for like a specialty shipping rate and everything else. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'll get you one. I'll get you a specialty one. Vegas. They always have specialty ones. They'll have weird ones out here.
Yes, thank you. if you choose a creative spelling, you dare to be different. Kate Hudson's son is Ryder, which is R-Y-D-E-R. Johnny Knoxville, his son's name is Rocco, which is R-O-C-K-O, and David Bowie and Iman, their daughter's name was Zoe, C-O-W-I-E, and it says many parents are taking a traditional name and putting their own spin to it, but this technique can backfire, where it said that parents say that they want a unique name, but not something so wild that the kid will be made fun of. So, if you choose a family name, like you did, you're sentimental. The name has a more personal story behind it, so it's not as flashy as naming your child after your favorite car or rock star, or I guess I would also say your favorite drink that led to said child.
Aww.
I mean, but yeah, it's
comment.
True.
It is true, though.
I've seen some girls named Chardonnay. You know, I think I saw enough of that back in the day. So, as long as it's not Food's Farm or something.
Yeah.
Oh,
God.
Yeah.
The box wine one. What is that, Perrins or something?
Yeah, Perrins or something like that. Like, you know, what's your name? Perrins? That's Food's Farm. You know, yeah, it doesn't go over well. A pop culture name means you're looking for a coffin spoof. So if you name your kid Monroe or Lennon or Bardo, you know, you're looking for a pop culture boost. So, if you name your child after a destination, you're adventurous. So, like Alicia Keys, her child's name is Egypt. Bardo's name is Memphis. And, of course, Victoria and David Beckham, they named theirs Brooklyn, but the reason they named theirs Brooklyn was because it was where the kid was conceived.
That's a great story to tell your kid, too.
Yeah.
But that's another thing to go into choosing names, too. It's, you know, there's, I know that my sister, who has a son, when they were choosing names, they were going through the rhymes that kids go through. Because everybody has to come up with a rhyme to make fun of kids' names, so they needed to, you know. Like, I'll bring one back from my past. Mary, Mary, quite contrary, had a butt that was so hairy. Mean kids, but it's a great rhyme. So that goes into it, too. You don't want to name your kid Bart and go from there.
Yes. I don't know if and if you go to the sixth name on that, they say you focus on success. So there's a lot of different baby names. Bart. Yeah, I can imagine all the fart jokes that will come with that as well. So, but now that we've got something warm and cuddly like baby names out of the way, let's see. I'm debating on what story to go with next here. I'm going to go to this one because I know this is probably going to take us for the rest of the show to explain. And the reason why I bring this up this week was because I've seen this on a couple of talk shows. I've seen it on the talk at CBS, and I think I've seen it on Dr. Phil this week. Mm-hmm. And it is an age-old question on whether it is okay to date your friend's ex. But this one kind of went in a weird way because it was talking about it from a girl's perspective and, you know, the girl code rules. And it wanted to know, was it okay to date your friend's ex, or whether if this is, you know, someone she dated only casually a long time ago, or whether it was someone she went on one or two dates with and it didn't work out. What is the etiquette? And
don't ask me because I'm not
going to
give you the right answer.
Now, the thing was that when it came to someone who she only went on one or two dates with that didn't work out, it was kind of the same thing. It says, think twice before dating. It's not cool to go out with someone who rejected your friend. And even if it was casually, you don't want to be linked that closely in degrees of sexual separation. And then, of course, just an ex, no, never. Or they say no, never. But I have heard of stories, and I think it was Aisha Tyler, and I don't want to get the story completely wrong, but she said that she dated her husband's best friend. She dated him first. And when things didn't work out, her current husband wanted to date her, and he asked her out. And she says they always got along, so she dated him, wound up getting married to him. Now, the husband is still friends with this guy. And, of course, you know, when they asked her, he's like, well, did you have sex with that guy? And she was like, yes. So that's kind of awkward, I would think, that when, you know, this guy comes over or he comes to visit, you know, that's the ex, that's the husband. I don't know. And I think you and I, we're going to agree with this at the same time. Is it okay to date your friend's ex?
No. No. I think it's completely off limits. But I know that there are people that do. You don't date your friend's ex, and you don't date your ex's best, or you don't date your ex's friend. Those are my two big rules. I know that cuts out a lot of the population because at some point or another, with like social media, Facebook and Twitter, there are a lot more people that are reconnecting as friends. Obviously, there's a level of friendship that you're looking there. Would I date, I'm trying to think of a friend that just broke up with somebody. I wouldn't date any of my sister's boyfriends. It's like, ew, that's too close, you know? I mean, hey, I'm a close family. I'm from a very close family. We're not that close. It's stuff like that. I think that there's too much, we have too much to worry about on our own to add to it. There's too much worry about what, you know, will he like me? Will she like me? Will we get along? Will we have the same views on things? To add the fact that, oh my God, we might be running into, insert friend's name here, will that be awkward? You don't need to add anything. So I steer away from that. I think it's taboo. But there are stories out there of people that are happily married or happily in relationships that work out that way. So I guess like people can. I know that women are more open to it than men, I think. I know that's the one thing that you and I agreed about last night.
Yeah. But I think that, you know, and I think we explained, we were talking about this initially. I said it's kind of different. With God, and I'm going in terms of age bracket here. If it was high school / college, it's not going to matter to guys if, you know, say, it's got to be rare. It is a very rare circumstance where I think a guy is going to care about it, only because then that's expected. You've got your group of friends, and it happened in my high school. There was a group of friends, and it seems at one point somebody was dating somebody who dated somebody else, and they're best friends with, you know, that person. You're just like, really? No. It was, I don't know, it was like maybe a group of 10. And it seemed like every year somebody switched off. You would think it was like a swingers club in high school.
Yeah, like a swapping.
But it's a lot different then. But once you get to like your 20s and like, you know, your 30s, no. You know, it's whether you're a man or a woman, and I think for even in that age, though, for women in high school, college, that's a definite no-no. Because if there's anything that will break up a friendship more quickly, it's that. Only because, you know, with girlfriends, there's that trust there, and it's like, okay, you're going to date my man who dumped me? Why? You know? And then it brings up that question, well, how long did you feel that way about him? You know? So I think it's a little bit different for men and women at that age bracket, but 20s and 30s, no. I would hope that none of my friends would date an ex. Well, actually, you know what? I actually hope they would, because oh, that sounds so cool. That sounds so cool. I would say they would have it coming to them anyway. But,
ouch!
That no, I'm going to be nice.
Evil of ours coming out, everybody.
speaking out. I mean, some people will feel that way. So I know I'm not the only one. If there was like an ugly breakup somewhere, and you know your friend's like, "Yeah, I'm going to date them," and I'd be like, "Okay, fine. If you want to go through all that problem, yeah, yeah." You know?
What's that joke that Rodney Dangerfield always said? Take my wife, please, or something like that.
Take my wife, please. But it was, you know, it was, yeah. I mean, if it's a situation like today, if you want to sign up for it, buddy, go right ahead. But, but no, the thing is that there's a couple of people who I would hope that I would be questioned. I would question my friend if they immediately wanted to date my ex.
There's also a time period, I think.
Yeah.
I think that also goes into play. Like, there's a time period. You don't, you know, but let's say, for example, we were dating. I know that's like, giggity. Anyway, you and I were dating, and we had a breakup. Ugly or not, I should not be dating your best friend tomorrow. Because then that's going to lead to the question of, wait a second, why did we really break up?
Yeah.
And that changes that trust factor, and I think that goes into that whole effect too. So I think there's a time limit too. I'm sure, like, if you and I were dating, and 10 years from now I met your friend completely separate from you and we started dating, I think you'd be more okay with that than if I dated your friend tomorrow.
Yeah. Because then I'm not wondering if there was something going on during that time we were together, because it would be that soon, you know, you'd be like, what the heck? And, yeah,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, yeah. So, no, when it comes down to the question, is it okay to date your ex? It's an emphatic no from both of us on that one. And I'm pretty sure a lot of you out there feel the same way as well. Now, we've got a couple of minutes to go, which brings up one more extra story here that I actually had. Actually, I had two of them. And the thing is that I didn't bring up the other one. I sometimes like to surprise my co-host with some odd stories that I find, and I'm actually going to do that again today. So this story I found this morning from the Associated Press, and this comes from over in France. And while men may find it the ultimate turn-on, the G-string is on its way out in France, ditched by droves of women who have found comfier and more flattering ways to look sexy. Back in the 90s, the G-string was the key lingerie item for French women, but its star has faded, according to an exhibition director for the International Lingerie Fair, which is taking place in Paris next week. But today, only one in four French women, among the world's top spenders in lingerie, are wearing a G-string. That's down from 30% in 2008. While 45% of women still acknowledge that a G-string can be sexy, a quarter see it as tacky. Only one in five see it as fashionable, and one in ten is practical. It's a sign of the changing times. There were hardly any G-strings among the slinky outfits on display ahead of the fair, intended as a snapshot of industry trends. You won't find any in the women's magazines either. For the bare truth, according to them, is that most women's bodies are absolutely not suited to the G-string. It wedges up to your bottom and does nothing at all for the figure. In the past decade, they said that brands have come a long way with products that offer the assets of the G-string. According to them, they say for long, slim women, they better to opt for a boxer short, which have become a staple even as the G-string's appeal wanes. I don't know, as a guy, I'm pretty sad to hear about that. Are you?
No. No, I'm not sad. I'm supposed to be. I will admit I do own a couple of G-strings. I was waiting for it. Okay, I do own a couple, but they're absolutely right. It doesn't really do. I mean, I should not be wearing something that bears my backside ever, but that's just, you know, whatever. It can be sexy if done correctly, and they've come out with a lot of different undergarments that do what G-strings were supposed to do, which is not show panty lines, have a higher waist on it or a higher cut on it so that you can wear, like, slits up to there and do those things. But now there's different kinds of undergarments that will do that for you without having to go with a permanent wedgie.
And by the way, we got less than a minute, but I will tell you that while men gained the G-string an overwhelming vote of confidence, 54% said that it still ticks the right boxes in the sexiness department. So there you go. 54% of men said it was still sexy. So,
and that's why I still own a pair.
Hey,
I know my audience.
People will stay in on that one. But let's stop that for a minute. Close to a minute. Anything you want to add before we wrap up shop here today?
I'm really excited that we got to do a do-over.
So am I. We
talk about Freaky Friday. That was great.
Yeah, and we got a chance to talk about G-strings on this Freaky Friday. So, hey.
Yes, we did.
Glad to see we're still a family show. But that will do it for us. Until next we meet again. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. For Mary, I'm LeVar. We'll see you next time.
Bye.